Hello, everybody. Do you have an idea for a true crime podcast? I publish true crime podcasts at my YouTube channel, Leader One Studios. I currently have 23,000 subscribers who are always looking for new true crime podcasts to listen to. This is an opportunity to build an audience quickly. If you're interested in joining the Leader One Podcast Network, send an email to morgansvariety@gmail.com. and we can discuss the details. Hello, everybody. Gratitude to everybody for listening, and additional heaps of gratitude to everybody who donates to the Patreon account. You keep the show going with your donations. As I keep the expenses paid, the more content I can create. You can donate at www.patreon.com/leader1. Or, if you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can send one through PayPal at morganrector331@hotmail.com. Remember, there is no minimum donation, no maximum donation. If $1 a month is all you feel like you can manage, especially in these difficult times, it's still appreciated. Thank you for everything, and enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Human Monsters, and this is a victim impact statement. Today I'm speaking with Melissa Anderson, and she is going to tell us a story about abuse that she suffered as a child and the impact it's made on her and her overall life. So welcome, Melissa.
Hi, thank you.
Yes, thank you for joining us. So I guess where I'm going to start off is if I'm going to ask you to describe the environment and structure of the domestic situation of your early childhood, would you describe it as normal or dysfunctional?
I would say dysfunctional for sure.
In what way?
Well, I was my grandmother, and I lived in a house with my grandmother, my uncle, and my cousin.
Okay, so your mother kind of dropped the ball in a sense?
Absolutely.
All right. So as far as the perpetrator of the abuse goes, what connection did you have with them?
You cut out.
Yeah, it is cutting out.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. So what connection did you have with the perpetrator of the abuse?
The relationship?
Yeah, what was the nature of your, what connection did you have to them? What was the nature of your relationship to them?
He is my uncle by blood.
Okay. And what was, before the abuse began, What kind of relationship did you have with him? Was it amicable? Were you close?
I wouldn't say close. It was what I considered a normal relationship, you know, when I was very much younger, and then progressed into the abuse.
And isolation is the number one tool abusers use to create a circumstance of victimhood. How did your uncle create the circumstances that enabled him to abuse you? Was there a grooming process involved where he gained your trust or anything like that?
I think I was so small that I just automatically trusted him. And my grandmother, she worked a lot. He didn't work. He was actually on disability. So he was there all the time at the house.
Okay. And did he ever say anything in an effort to persuade you that what he was doing was normal or justifiable?
No, he didn't. we had never really discussed the abuse, you know, verbally. The only thing that I specifically remember him was that if I told anyone that he would kill my family.
Yeah, that's something that tends to occur where they issue threats, where they issue blackmail. And without getting graphic, so when did he typically approach you? Was there a particular time of day or day of the week, anything like that?
It could be any time, which is why I tried to stay away from my house as much as humanly possible, going to friends' houses, trying to sleep over. I even went to summer school. Not because I had to, but because they offered extra classes and I just didn't have to be at home with him. It usually happened in the middle of the night, no warning, just I would be asleep and then he would be there.
And how often did the abuse occur? Was it a weekly thing? How many times a week, how many times a month?
I would say at least four times a week.
Did he go all the way, so to speak, or was it just molestation, or
was there... No, it was rape.
It was full out rape. And yes. One thing that often occurs, particularly when females are raped at that age, when you're a child, is there are medical complications. Did anything like that arise?
I do remember having like a lot of urinary tract infections, you know, things that probably should have caught the attention of medical professionals. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Did it affect your behavior at the time? Did you develop anxiety or depression, anything like that?
I would say all of the above, because it was like he was always there. You know, and it's not like, you know, I didn't live somewhere else. I lived with him. So, you know, any time that there was any chance that we would be alone was frightening. It was just, you know, just the thought of it just made me sick.
Oh, yeah. Did it happen every time you were alone together?
Practically.
And did you report the abuse to anyone?
Yes, I had eventually told my grandmother when I moved out of the house.
And how did she react?
She basically told me that there was no way that her sweet boy could have done anything like that.
And how did that make you feel?
In context, it made me feel pretty fucking awful, because I moved out when I was 15, I was almost 16, and I could see that he was taking a lot of interest in my younger cousins. Do you get my drift?
Yeah.
And so the reason that I actually told her was because I felt that way, and I felt like something was going to happen, and I thought that she could stop it.
So did you ever see him relate to those younger cousins in the way that he did to you when the abuse would occur? Like, did you see definite signs like, oh my God, he's about to...
Absolutely. Like, you know, come sit on my lap. Like, you know, let's go play in the room. You know, it was just things that I saw myself, you know, being in the same position. And I just kind of knew where it was heading.
Have you spoken with any of them since those years?
I spoke to my grandmother a couple of times. I would still go see her like on Mother's Day and such, because she always was my mom. Despite her faults, she took care of me when she didn't have to. you know. So I've seen her a couple of times. My own mother, I only met her 5 times in my entire life. So, you know, she wouldn't have had a clue what was going on, basically. So.
Oh, why was that, by the way?
She just preferred men and drugs over, I mean, I think she had total 5 children and she never took care of any of them.
Oh, she just passed them along. They were just,
yeah, just pop them out and just not a problem anymore. So,
so I guess she was like a typical junkie in that regard. The drugs come first. And
yeah, I can still remember one incident very clearly. It was Mother's Day and I went to see my grandmother and then she guilt tripped me into going to my mom. She was like, your mom really wants to. She told me that my mom wanted to see my daughter. So I took her over there. She was about 2 years old, I think, at the time. And yeah, my mom just said, hey, do you want to do some drugs?
What kind of drugs was she talking about?
Cocaine.
Cocaine. Oh, that's a wholesome family activity.
Oh, yes. With your child, your 2 year old.
Yeah, she actually proposed to do that in front of your daughter.
Oh, she actually had it right there. So, Jesus. Yeah.
Thank God your daughter wouldn't be able to remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the only time she's ever seen her, just for the record. So
is your daughter aware of the abuse that happened to you back then?
I think she knows on some level because I'm super overprotective of her, you know, like when she was little, I didn't want her like spending the night anywhere, you know, just I'm sure in a lot of people's eyes, maybe kind of over the top, but in my own eyes, I was just protecting her from something that I thought could happen to anyone, you know.
And how else did those experiences change you emotionally in the long term? Like, you know, aside from the immediate effects like depression and anxiety at the time you were abused, how does it affect you now?
I mean, it still affects me, you know, as far as depression goes. Yeah, I still, you know, have flashbacks or wake up in the middle of the night.
And, I was going to ask if you had nightmares, but I guess that's part of it, right? Night terrors.
Yeah. And not only that, just, someone can't touch me before I'm awake.
Oh yes.
Right. If we were together and someone, and you like, you know, wanted to rub my back or something while I was asleep, I would immediately freak the fuck out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's...
Because my mind isn't, you know, it's not awake, so that's the only thing I'm thinking it can be.
Did he wake you up to do those things?
I always tried to pretend like I was asleep, but it didn't always work.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so did those experiences with the abuse, did they affect your ability to be intimate in relationships?
Definitely. Kind of, you know, to the same effect earlier. You know, sometimes you wake up your partner, you're ready to go, you know. It doesn't work that way for me.
So, yeah, everything has to be done when you're like awake, when you're not
fully, yeah, like not in, you know, I don't know what you call it when you first wake up, you know, you just have that few minutes where you're kind of getting orientated and what have you. And then, you know, I don't know if this is too much detail, but if someone is sweating and it's dripping on me, it immediately, like, it takes me back, and it's awful because they don't know, you know, what it's doing to me.
Yeah.
And it's not something you can stop or help, you know. It happens.
Yeah. It must be really hard to separate those two experiences in your mind, the abuse that happened when you were a child and then the consensual relations you're having as an adult, like, has it been challenging to distinguish between them both and to maintain that the consensual activity is fine, and also to brush aside any flashbacks of the abuse? Is it difficult to keep them separated?
It is. Sometimes you can't help it. Like, it's just immediately that's what your mind goes to, you know, based on something that's happening to you right now. For me, I can't separate it. It's not possible in the moment.
Do you ever have experiences like, if you see men who resemble him, it makes you uncomfortable?
No, thank God there's no one else that ugly on the planet, I don't think.
Well, that's good. That's good then.
Yeah, it is. At least there's that.
So was he ever prosecuted for what he did to you or what he did to anyone else?
No, he was supposed to be prosecuted because he did molest another family member of mine. She was young at the time, and she, much like myself, couldn't put myself out there like that, and you know, I can't blame her for that.
Yeah, it's troublesome because basically when you go to court, it's not just the perpetrator who's on trial, the victim is also on trial, and the defense attorney's gonna try to cast doubt on their credibility and accuse them of lying, and that's a whole other form of trauma on top of whatever already happened.
Yeah, and I think that when you're so young, when you're just a teenager, you can't justify to yourself like that it's going to be better, or that it's going to 100% work out and he's going to be behind bars. You know, and if he doesn't, then what? Then what are you subject to?
Yeah, it must have been difficult too as well. Like, you know, you knew you had friends who had normal family situations, and meanwhile you're living in that hell.
I loved their families. I wanted to be in their families.
Was that a very isolating, lonely experience to know that you didn't have that kind of family situation?
You know, it was, but only from, you know, looking in on other people's families, because I never had that. So it's not like I had it and it was taken away. It never existed for me.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, you know, just to the effect where I could see other people being happy and normal and having normal relationships, you know.
And before the abuse began, actually, how old were you when it started?
8 years old.
And did you know anything about sex, anything sex related? Did you have any knowledge? So, and then that's introduced and you don't even know what it is. So at first, like, how did you process it? Like, what did you think about it?
I don't know if I was so overwhelmed. You know, it happened. It hurt. I couldn't tell anybody. I think I just, from that moment on, I think I was just kind of in survival mode. Like, you know, the other thing about living there too was, you know, the fear that if I say something and he doesn't like it, he can kick me out.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, you had to live with him.
So that's a whole other aspect of it. You know, like if it's someone you don't reside with, it's a little different, but I knew that he helped my grandma pay the bills with his disability. So that was always a fear of saying something. And then what? I'm 9 years old out on my ass.
Well, you know, she's also culpable because she enabled it. I mean, well, do you think she was aware of it while it was happening?
You know, at first I wouldn't say so, but looking back, I'm pretty sure she had to. And if she didn't know, then she had, you would think you would see the signs in a small kid who has been traumatized.
Well, I mean, I think, you would definitely have a sharper eye for this than I would, I guess, given the experience you've had, but I think if I observed a man doing things like, you know, telling kids to sit on his lap and yes. bringing them to a private space to interact, I think I would see red flags. And even and so maybe she just didn't want to see them. Maybe it was denial.
You know, she had a weird relationship with her son. Her husband died when she had 4 or 5 small children. She always told me how he looked just like her, dead husband. So I'm not sure what kind of complex they had going on, but I think she was willing to overlook a lot of things.
Yeah, emotional incest, where
yes,
he became the man of the house, and she was willing to, I guess, tolerate just about anything.
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
Do you think, maybe, by any chance, were you ever aware, maybe, if he was a sex offender outside of the home, if he had victims that were not members of the family?
I'm 100% certain he did. Because I remember getting a call from some random lady, and she was asking me if I was related to him, and I think she maybe went through his Facebook, at the time, or it might have been MySpace, it was so long ago, but I think she found my profile, because I'm definitely not friends with him, obviously, but she found it through, like, my aunt or something, and so she reached out to me, and that she had 3 small kids, and that, she suspected him of molesting them. And I told her, absolutely, yes, get your children away from this man immediately.
Oh, so you don't know if that led to any prosecution or not?
No, I really doubt it led to any prosecution. I haven't seen any jail records or anything to that effect, so...
God, that's
too bad, though.
It's unbelievable. I mean, such a long history of offending in that area, and he's just gotten away scot-free.
It is sad. I wish that, the statute of limitations didn't exist, because now, I'm a stronger person than I obviously was many, many years ago, but I would definitely want to see his ass behind bars.
Yeah, it's a shame that people can't press charges based on, offenses that happened when they were children, because it is hard for kids to come forward, especially when the perpetrator is in the home.
Or when their family members are protecting them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most of these offenders are relatives. They're usually known to the child very well, and the incest is certainly a big part of it. Have you ever sought counseling for what happened?
I did. My problem, and I don't think it's really a problem, honestly, is that for my own sake and my sanity, I've blocked out so many years of home life. When my friends ask me sometimes, hey, do you remember this in junior high? I'm like, nope, don't remember anything. Don't want to, not gonna. I remember very specific instances, the first time, several other things, but for the most part, I have literally just blocked it out, and I'm not sure that I want to break down that wall any more than the little bit that slips out here and there.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, there are some people who say, oh no, you must deal with it. But I think if you can do that, if thinking about it would upset you more, you do have the psychological wherewithal to avoid thinking about it and shut it out, then I think, by all means, maybe if that gets you through the day, maybe that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a period of, 7 or 8 years, every single week, multiple times a week. Yeah, I don't think that I want to relive that any more than I do in my nightmares.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Have you ever sought, maybe groups on the internet comprised of people who have experienced these events?
No, I really have not. You know, I've shared it with maybe three people in my entire life. And one or two was because they had had similar experiences. So I kind of found that cathartic, and I could see how people would get into that, you know. It just, for me, it's just hard to talk about.
Sure, yeah.
But here we are.
Well, yes, exactly. Well, I mean, it's a lot more common than most people would like to think. I mean, I once heard this statistic that 1 in 3 American women were sexually abused in some form as a child. When you take into account the population of the United States and the fact that, you know, there's roughly a 50-50 ratio of male-female, that means approximately 50 million American women were raped and or molested as a child. I mean, that is a huge number.
I can guarantee that if I asked half of my friends, the answer would probably be yes.
Well, I mean, one time I conducted this little sociological experiment of my own where I asked all these women I knew, like when you were like 12, 13, 14 years old, did you have men in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s approaching you for sex or dates? They all said yes, every single one of them.
Yep.
And they knew these girls were that age at the time. And
exactly. Know. This isn't a case of mistaken identity.
Oh, no. Like, in fact, I was watching a video tonight on YouTube where they interviewed a woman who had been a child prostitute. She was an escort at the age of 13. And she said a number of her clients, her johns, they knew she was 13, and that was why they paid her for her services.
I mean, there's many cases where women prostitute out their daughters, you know, for the same reason that's what is attracting these sickos.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on this show, as you know, there are a lot. I'm actually in the process of creating the 24th episode about a child abuse case. And, you know, most of them involved some amount of sexual abuse. So whenever I've described certain incidents, is that hard for you to listen to?
Yeah, I remember one episode in particular. I was at work and I was listening because that's, you know, when I have 8 hours a day to just listen to Morgan. Mm-hmm. And so I remember just like tears welling up, and like I thought, oh my gosh, you know, my coworkers would think I'm just sitting here like crying to myself, but I literally had to go outside. I was sobbing. Like, it was just so horrific and so traumatic, and, you know, brought back this like terrible flood of memories. But people's stories need to be told, especially, you know, people who can't defend themselves, like children. So that's why I listen. You know, I still listen despite that, even if it hurts me a little bit to hear it.
And have you ever read you know, books about that on your own, listened to other podcasts about it, or is it mostly this show?
No, I've listened to a lot of true crime podcasts, and yeah, I just think that some podcasts, they tend to stay away from the cold, hard facts when they're really brutal. I want to hear all those facts. Not necessarily when it comes to children, but, you know, the crimes, and I want to hear specifics, things like that. So how can I say that I don't want to hear that, you know, in one case and then in not the other? I don't think I can do that.
Yes. And do you think, what do you think is the difference between an 8-year-old child who has been sexually abused and one that hasn't? I mean, certainly the one who's been abused has lost their innocence. What do you think is the difference in terms of their disposition, their outlook on life?
I mean, you just, you feel like it's not fair. You know, you don't know why this is happening to you, why it's not, you know, you hope it's not happening to your friends, you know, just things like that. I think you just, you know, you lose some of the magic from your childhood.
Yeah, did you, Yeah, so your innocence was robbed. You were robbed of your innocence, you know?
Absolutely.
So what was your childhood like from then on? Like, I mean, in terms of everything outside of the abuse, like, how did you view it all? Like, was it just, were you more cynical?
I wasn't more cynical. I was definitely more cautious of other people, of other people's male relatives, you know, kind of thinking they could all be like him, you know.
So it must have been hard for you to, like, be alone with a male adult.
Yes, I would just shudder at the thought of that, you know. And even if they weren't unassuming, or, you know, I knew that they were good people, it's just you can't justify that when you're only 8 years old. You can't say, you know, well, this person could never do that, because I thought at one point that he could never do that too.
Yes, of course. And do you think, like, if, say, you went into a home where that was happening, do you think, like, you'd have such a keen eye that you would know that something untoward was going on? Like,
I think I am super suspicious of any, and I'm just going to say it, of any male relative, counterpart, you know, dad, boyfriend, husband, whatever, who shows, you know, so much special interest in one child. That's not to say that they can't, you know, just be a great dad and a great coach and things like that. But I think you can see, you know, when it's going downhill, or like I said, if some male relative tells you, hey, come sit on my lap, I want to bounce you up and down, I think I would immediately just, you know, say something, do something, you know, that I couldn't have done for myself.
Yeah, I also read this article a while ago. I think it might have been last year. This woman made an interesting point. She was talking about how in families, sometimes, like, the parent will basically force their child to go up to a relative and, like, be physically affectionate to them, you know, give them a hug.
Yes.
Do you think maybe that's inappropriate?
You know, I don't think you should force anyone to do that, especially a child. But children, they want hugs. They want kisses. You know, if you're doing it right, you give your kids a hug. You give them a kiss. I don't necessarily think that's so much of a red flag. But no, I don't think you should force them to do anything, because I think sometimes maybe they have a feeling or an instinct. Maybe they don't think that person's quite right.
Mm-hmm.
They can't explain it, you know.
Maybe it's a relative they see, like, once a year at Christmas, and they don't have a relationship with them. So it's just...
Why do you need to do that? Yeah, there's no need for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's inappropriate.
I think it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, to push that on them, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Eddie Murphy did a joke about being made to kiss his aunt or something like that, and start to walk away crying, and, you know, it's...
Yeah, I do remember that sketch pretty well.
Yeah. It's funny, but at the same time, like, I get his point, you know, it's just like...
Right, you don't want to kiss someone's big, hairy, weird mole face, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. As an adult, would you want to kiss just anybody, you know, even if they're relative?
No, that's why we don't go around kissing people, like, as an expression of saying hello. We, like, wave or high five, you know?
And
now we elbow bump because we got the COVID.
And nothing against Europeans, but, you know, in North America, we don't do the cheek kiss thing or anything like that.
No, I'm not down for that. So thank you.
Yeah, it's funny because I went on vacation in Cuba once, and they do that there, and this guy's girlfriend said hello by doing the cheek kiss, and it was fine. It's just, because I wasn't used to it, it was kind of jarring for a moment, because that... We're so repressed here.
I always feel like if someone tries to do the cheek kiss, because I'm very super awkward, that I would end up, like, accidentally kissing them on the mouth. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would turn at the wrong time or something, and it would just go downhill from there.
Yeah, we're very intense about intimacy in this part of the world, for sure.
Yeah.
Take all this stuff very seriously.
Sometimes you should.
Yeah. So do you think the laws against pedophiles are strict enough? Do you think they need to go further?
I think the only thing that's going to save someone who is a known pedophile is a bullet.
Yeah.
I don't believe in rehabilitation. You can't tell me that you think you're having a consenting relationship with a child. And some of these people actually in their brains believe that because the kid couldn't say no, didn't know how to, that it was consenting. That's not how this works. I don't think you can fix that. That's just how I feel.
Well, I mean, the notion that a child could lie about it is ludicrous because children are very scared by the notion that their families could be broken up, that they could be put in foster care. Like any social worker will tell you that, like, even if it's just a matter of neglect, a lot of children really don't want to tell outsiders what's going on because they don't want to lose touch with their families. And so the notion that they would make up something that would cause that to happen, I mean, that's pretty unlikely.
I think that's absurd, especially, you know, and you have to take into account, you know, like maybe on some level that could happen, you know, in some fucking weird side universe, but some 10, you know, 8, 6-year-old child tells you something like that, and usually they're very specific about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how they say it, the words that they use for parts of their body, things like that. I think that, I think in this case, you have to say you believe them, like, no matter what, honestly. I can't see one instance where my child would come to me and tell me something was happening with her, and I wouldn't immediately just, honestly, I'd probably lose my mind. But I would also at the same time do everything in my power to make sure that that never happened again from anybody ever.
And getting into semantics for a moment, do you currently view yourself as a victim or a survivor?
I don't think I'm either, or maybe both, honestly. I am surviving. I definitely was a victim. You know, most days I can just hope to not think about it for a little while.
Well, I mean, you're doing a lot better than some people would, because these experiences often lead to substance abuse, to, self-harm, like cutting and, many.
I always thought about cutting, but I didn't like blood that much, so it probably wouldn't have worked out for me.
Yeah, it's too squeamish about that, eh?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Yes, I sometimes would drink to forget, but nothing that, you know, that got in the way of me being a mom or a wife at the time. So I am thankful for that. I'm thankful that I could block it out as much as I did.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, to pick that particular scab, I mean, it just means falling back into pain again.
I think you just do whatever you can to just make it through to the next day.
Did you ever go through a phase where, you know, you had a lot of anger that you couldn't let go of?
Oh, yeah. When I was in my 20s, you know, I hated life. I hated everything. Everything wasn't fair. I didn't have a mom. I didn't have a dad, you know. And by the time I moved out of the house, my uncle and my grandmother moved away, which was good, but I still missed her. She was still part of my family. And then I kind of just never knew where they were after that. I mean, when my mom died, I called her to tell her that her daughter died, and I could hear him in the background talking over her. And I just told her, I said, tell him to shut the fuck up.
God.
I said, your daughter just died. And do you know what she told me?
What?
Drug overdose. Like it was no big deal.
Had she OD'd before?
She had, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, certainly not the most appropriate reaction, but I guess people who have had someone who was close to them be a drug addict, I guess they do kind of throw in the towel on that person.
I mean, I understand, but at the same time, I'm calling to tell you that my mother, who is your daughter, died, and you're just very... I mean, I only met the woman 5 times my entire life, but I still, the minute that she got sick, she went into a coma, I dropped everything. I went to her, you know, because I felt like I would regret it if I didn't do that, you know?
Well, it shows you're the better person.
Some days. Yeah. Some days I'm still the whole thing, so, as you can see.
So, say someone who has had a comparable experience with the abuse came to you and asked you, like, you know, how do you get through it? How do you deal with it? What advice would you give them?
I would tell them that you never get over it. The best that you can hope for is that you can have a life that you can focus on the good things, the things that are here and now, and you know, some point you won't have to relive it every single day, hopefully. Some of us do, some of us don't, but it does subside. I mean, it's still always there with you, always and forever. It's a complete scar, but you can still be a normal person and go about your life. And I like to think that I'm a good person, a decent person, and that's what I'm striving for. So,
and for someone who's never had the experience, but they've had someone in their life come to them and confide in them, telling them that that happened to them and that it's affecting them, what would you say are the best ways to react to it? What are some do's and don'ts in terms of what you say and do?
Listen to them. Ask them for specifics. If it's a small child, you know, use words they're familiar with. Listen to them. They're telling you for a reason. If they're going through this, there's a reason they're telling you. And it's because they think that something's going to happen to someone else, or that, you know, it could go from that to something worse. Maybe they think they're going to die. There's a reason that they're coming to you. And if they trust you enough to come to you, just do everything in your power to help them. Call CPS. You know, do whatever you can, but don't give up. Don't let it go. Don't let it slide. And don't let them become another statistic.
And when it comes to something like a marriage or common law marriage, you mentioned earlier about how, you know, you don't want to be like touched while you're asleep. So are there a lot of other negotiations that have to be made in the relationship in order to ensure that, you know, you don't experience PTSD flashbacks or anything like that?
No, I think that some things can't be avoided in the heat of the moment. You know, and like I had said before, a lot of the things I kind of pushed out of my mind. So just sometimes when there is that moment, it just brings it back. And it's so raw and so just right there that there's not really anything you can do. Me, I would just, I don't know how to say this, push through, get it over with as quickly as possible, and just, you know, cry in the shower later or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as someone who also had experienced abuse, I mean, the sad thing about the long-term implications of the effects on your life is that it's not fixable, is it?
No, it's not. And the other person, they don't have any idea, you know, what's happening to you unless you tell them.
Yeah.
So, yes, I have had to have that conversation, like, okay, like, I know we're going to sleep right now, but in the morning, like, you know, I mean, I've almost hit someone in the face before, you know, just like a natural, like, jerk reaction, because there was times all the times when I would be asleep and I would wake up to someone touching me and it would be him.
Yes.
And that's the only thing that my mind goes to when it's not, you know, when I'm not fully awake. That's what my subconscious goes to.
Do you have, you probably heard of that thing called gaydar. Some people think they know which guy. Do you think you have, like, a good radar for, like, what guys are have the potential to commit those offenses?
No, I just think, like I said, there are some, you know, red flags. Someone pays too much interest in your kids, you know, and not in a good way. You know, they buy them things. They, you know, they want alone time with them. You need to teach your kids that no adult needs your help, number one. And number two, no adult needs to have a secret with you. Period. End of story. Those two things every child should know.
Yeah,
because those are the two things that end up hurting them the most.
Yeah, and the thing about the grooming process is that it doesn't start with the child. It starts with the family. It starts with the parents.
Exactly.
They establish trust with the whole family, and then eventually they zero in on the child that's caught their attention.
Right. Let me take her out for ice cream. Let me, you know, do this. And, you know, oh, you need a night off? Let me watch the kids. No, don't let them watch the fucking kids.
Yeah, they shouldn't be too eager, you know.
Yes, exactly. And I'm not saying that everyone is like that. I'm just saying that in my experience, that is how it begins a lot of the times.
And whenever it came to things like extracurricular activities or summer camp or whatever, did it put you on edge if there were males who were in a supervisory capacity?
No, I didn't have a lot of interaction with males in like the supervisory capacity. It was always like, I did summer school and stuff like that, but it was usually home economics, child development. You know, it was a very small town. We all know all the teachers, so you know who's going to be teaching what class. So that kind of helped me to pick, you know, which classes I would go to during the summer. But I do remember just being so thankful not to be at my house. You know, for those 3 months, I would have taken night school if they would have let me.
And did you ever consider running away before you moved out?
To where?
Well, I don't know. Like, you know, a lot of kids run away when they're experiencing abuse. Like,
I think in a bigger town, that could be possible. In a small town, I would have just got my ass beat and would have been sent right back.
Oh, so you were too far away from the nearest city, I guess, right?
Yeah, it was a town of, I think now it has like 4,000 people, but at the time it was like 2,000 people, maybe.
Oh, that's a tiny, so this is like in a rural community?
Everyone knows everyone, you know, you know when so-and-so's car is at your friend's house. You know what everyone's doing in the whole town. It's a whole thing.
More cows than people?
It's a one horse town, and they just got a stoplight. So good for them.
Okay. Yeah, that is small.
Mm-hmm. You blink, you might miss it.
Oh yeah, exactly.
So
have you overcome the worst aspects of the emotional fallout of it?
I would like to think so. I think, you know, the thing that I deal with the most, like I said, is flashbacks during intimate moments or nightmares or, you know, the fear that something like that could happen to my nieces, my daughters, my nephews. You know, I just don't think that fear ever goes away. You're just always suspicious of everyone, which is literally terrible because not everyone is a scumbag, but it's just you need to be vigilant.
Does your uncle still interact with the children of the family?
No, because they had moved away after he molested another family member. I'm pretty sure, you know, that family member's parents probably would have murdered him. and I do not blame them.
Oh, so that's why they moved away, because he was a dead man, basically.
Yes, exactly. Dead man walking.
Oh, and this is Texas we're talking about.
We could have made it look like an accident real fast.
So do you believe that these kinds of acts deserve the death penalty?
I do. I think when it's 100% proven, there's no doubt. I definitely do. I think you've scarred a person for the rest of their entire lives. You've ruined first times, first things for them. You've ruined their dreams, their innocence. I don't think you should be able to be free ever again.
Well, I mean, making the law, the criminal penalties steeper and more strict doesn't seem to be working. I mean, Florida, I think, has the toughest laws against sex offenders in the whole United States. There's even a trailer park where it's just convicted pedophiles who live there. But I don't know, it's just not every criminal has a criminal record, right? So.
No, absolutely. The best ones don't get caught. But then there are the ones that do that, I was just looking up a case. What did they call him? The Monster of the Andes, I believe. And he led police to 57 bodies that he buried of small girls between the ages of 9 and 12. And in that country, they only have a 20-year maximum sentence. He got 20 years after showing them the bodies of 57 girls. Well, and he said he couldn't wait to get out to do it again.
Is his name Louis something? Last name G.
Don't get me lying. I was skimming over earlier because I had never heard of him, and that was shocking to me. But he did get out 16 years later, and he did go on to murder another 100 or so small children.
Mm.
So that in itself should tell you something. Yes, the laws need to be tougher. I know this was in another country, but 57 bodies. And the reason he said he killed so many was because there, it's the same as killing one. You get the same sentence. It's served consecutively, and they can only give you 20 years. And he got out 4 years early for good behavior.
Good behavior, eh?
Yeah, and I'm wondering how good that fucking behavior really could have been, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny, because I once looked at the the sex offender registry thing for one particular part of the United States. I can't remember where it was. But it was so long that it occurred to me if I had to actually just finished reading it, it probably would have taken me hours. There are so many of them.
I recommend Family Watchdog. It's a website that you put your own address into, and you can literally see every offender within whatever mile radius that you set. Honestly, I've always lived near schools because I know they can't be within a certain radius of schools. When my kid was younger, we always lived very close to a school, and I always felt much safer there than I would have, being somewhat further out. And I know that's not a deterrent necessarily, but to know that your kid is, riding by on their bicycle every day to and from a place, just that does not sit with me.
Yeah, and one thing that's really tricky is that, you don't want your child to be paranoid about that sort of thing.
You don't, but you need to teach them to be vigilant, too.
Yeah, I mean, well, when I was a kid, the emphasis was on stranger danger. Don't talk to strangers, but actually, the strangers only account for something like 7% of all the perpetrators of these crimes.
Exactly, and that's why I was alluding to the whole, no adult needs to have a secret with you. A lot of times predators will say, this is our secret. We're going to play a little game and you can't tell anybody, or they'll give you, things to make up for it, trinkets or stuff like that. And so that's why I think it's important, to talk to them, but on a level they can understand.
Yeah.
You can't freak out a 4-year-old by saying that everyone that, you know, hugs you is a predator. No, you just have to use certain words and just kind of put it into their head. Like, if anyone ever hurts you, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, just, you know, you just, and maybe it's just me, maybe I'm overreacting, but that's how I've always went about it. And that's how I would continue to do so.
Yeah. And I wonder often if, which is more traumatic, what you experienced or when manipulation is involved, where the child's brainwashed into thinking it's normal or acceptable, and then they feel later on that they were complicit in it, whereas what you experienced, you knew from day one, it was what was happening to you was wrong, it was painful, it was abusive. So you never were never confused about that fact of it. But then when it comes to children who are manipulated into it, and in some cases they even initiate some of the contact because they think it's normal. And then years later they think, well, maybe I must have really wanted it because I instigated it half the time.
No, I think that that's just that's a normal guilt that you feel no matter what. Because I was very young. I know I didn't instigate anything. But you still always wonder, you know, why me? Why was it me? Did I do something? Like that's always going to play on your mind, no matter if you were groomed, no matter if it just happened to you. I think it's just like a natural thing to wonder if there's anything that you could have done to prevent that.
And did you ever try fighting him off or telling him to stop or asking him to stop?
Yeah, I did. It fell on deaf ears, where, like I said, he would threaten to kill my grandmother. I didn't have much family, but I had some, and he would just tell me, you know, do you want to be taken away? Do you want to go live somewhere even worse than this? And I couldn't even think of anything worse than that. But the thought of that, it fucking terrified me.
And were you ever aware of any other kind of criminal behavior of his that may have affected other people?
He was a drug addict. He smoked meth. There was plenty of times where he was just, I'm sure, out of his mind, that he would like to blame, you know, some of his things on. But I can't see that happening for, you know, 8 years straight. So I don't believe that for one goddamn second.
No, especially not when it happened with other, when it affected other people as well.
Exactly.
Well, and ultimately he had to have known it was wrong if he didn't blackmail you into silence, you know.
Oh, he knew it was wrong. He wore a condom when he did it.
Yeah, well, thank God you never got pregnant.
Yes, thank God. But, you know, just the foresight that goes into that is the terrifying part for me.
Oh, yeah, because this is like, it's not even a matter of acting on the wrong impulse. This was...
making a decision in your mind that this is going to happen.
Yeah, he planned it out. It was premeditated.
Absolutely.
Wow. I mean, yeah, this sounds like this guy's just a sociopath, really.
I mean, he is just, and the worst part, I think, is he's probably still out there destroying children to this day if he has the opportunity and the means. I firmly believe that he would do it again.
And so a while ago, you left a common law marriage. Was it?
No, I was actually legit married.
Oh, you were married. Okay.
Legal. Yeah.
Okay. And so was that marriage affected by these experiences, by the aftermath of them?
Oh, absolutely. You know, like I was saying, just intimate moments, you know, they didn't necessarily, I didn't necessarily voice them always, but sometimes I would have to. I would have to say, stop. You know, and to try to put it into words when you you don't want to, but you know you need an explanation, you know, for how something is going. You don't want to say those things to someone. You don't want to say, oh, I'm sorry, you remind me of the time that I was raped brutally. It's a hard conversation to have, even with your, you know, husband.
Yeah, and then and then there's their disappointment. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they have a right to be disappointed or not. That's a kind of a complex issue, but
sure. No, he was always understanding. You know, I had told him many years ago what happened, because I would obviously wake up crying. I would wake up screaming. I would just, there were times when I couldn't control my response to it, you know. So we did have the conversation, and he always was very understanding. But it is hard to say that to someone. It's really hard to say this in nice intimate moment we were having was just ruined by something that happened to me 27 years ago. You know, that's hard to say to someone.
Well, it has to be said, you know, it's important. Otherwise, with no explanation, that can be worse, right?
Absolutely. You don't want them to think it's them, when in reality, it's not. It's definitely not. And it's not something they ever intention. It's just like the smallest, weirdest, you know, thing can just trigger it. And you're just immediately right back there, helpless and just, you know, in this state of fucking, like, panic, you know.
And do you think one day you might tell your daughter exactly what happened? Or are you uncomfortable with that? Or
I'm not comfortable with that. I know I probably should be, but it's very traumatic to talk about. And I'm not sure that I could keep it together enough to talk to her about it and sound rational and normal.
Yeah, I can imagine it would, and really, I guess, to discuss anything sexual, even if it is about sexual impropriety with your child, that's hard too. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we had the birds and the bees talk, but I think this would be just a little bit different than that. So.
Yeah, so she never met him, did she?
No, never. No. I remember my granny asking me one time, "Oh, you should let her come and stay the night."
Right.
And I said, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Well, so she will never, not in a million years, will she ever step foot in that house as long.
It's interesting that
living and breathing.
It's interesting that she proposed not just a visit, but spending the night. Like, to me, that sounds almost like complicity. Like, maybe she helped.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's kind of that hurt me too. The fact that she would be so nonchalant about it when I told her exactly what happened to me in hopes that it wouldn't happen to anyone else.
Well, yeah, I mean, a fixture of dysfunctional family households is that there's a certain amount of accommodation of the abuse, you know, and quite often it is the matriarch who's responsible.
That's just, as a mother, and I didn't even have a mother, like we've discussed, I did have my grandmother, but it's not the same. And as a mother, I always used my mother as, the person to be the exact opposite of.
Yeah.
She's the example of something I never want to be. I never want to let my children go, never see them again, don't care about them, let them get, you know, raped, abused, molested. She lived in the same town as I did for, I think, about 10 years. She moved back when I was about 10, and she didn't even go to my high school graduation.
God, you've never really
felt... She lived in the same town, the same small, shitty town.
So you've never really had a great family situation at all, except for with your daughter then?
Yes. Yes, I definitely have a great family situation with my daughter. She's amazing. My ex is amazing. He is a great dad. You know, I trust him implicitly with her. But anyone else, no. Sorry. You don't stand a chance. I'm going to be scrutinizing you, honestly, 24/7.
Wow.
I know, that's kind of sad, but...
Well, yeah, it's normal that it's normal that you'd be hyper-vigilant about it.
You know? Yeah.
Were you ever... Did you ever... A lot of victims of sexual abuse either become hyposexual, like they don't ever want to have sex, and then there's the hypersexual where either they're promiscuous or they become employed in sex work. Did you get to a point where you thought you would never want to willingly engage in sex?
You know, no, I think it was always... I was always very cautious, very careful. I mean, I can count on one hand the number of people I've been with. It's not something I take lightly, inviting someone to be intimate with you. Because if something does happen, like I said, you have a flashback, a memory, you know, you owe that to them to explain it so that they don't think it's them. Well, I never wanted to put myself in a situation where I had to explain it to someone that I just met, you know?
Yes, of course. Well, I appreciate you sharing the story with us today. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to open up about, but I think anyone else who's experienced it will feel a lot less alone than they otherwise might. So thank you for sharing. And by the way, everybody,
thank you. I'm a big fan of your podcast. So. Thank you.
And by the way, Melissa has a true crime podcast of her own. It's called This Is True Crime, Y'all. It's available on Anchor. Where else is it available?
It's on Spotify and it's on the Leader One YouTube channel.
That's right. Yep. So where I publish my podcast on YouTube, you can see episodes of her podcast there. She's very good at it. She's a natural podcasting. She's done three episodes, but she sounds like a veteran already. So she's
that. Yeah, I hope as good as you one day.
Oh, well, you're pretty close, I have to say. All right.
Well, 37 episodes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're going to get there, I promise.
You cutting out on me?
Yeah.
Thank you. I really hope it's super hard, so we'll just see where it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, thank you for talking to me tonight.
Thank you, hon. Have a great night.
You too.
Bye.